her body going soft and pliant. His, all his. It had been far too long since he'd been with a woman, but especially his woman. His body recognized her immediately and made urgent demands of its own. He was a man with iron control, and he remembered that feeling of complete and utter exaltation, knowing there was a woman who could arouse him naturally.
Just talk to them. Ask them questions about their lives, just like you started to do with Ilya. Tell them why you're here. Talk to them about your other brothers and sisters and why they're important to you.
He could do that. It didn't seem that difficult. He could talk to anyone in any situation. He was trained and had skills, so it didn't make sense that he was all over the place because they were his birth brothers. Not, he decided, that any of them were doing much better.
Thanks, baby,
he said softly, meaning it. He looped her ponytail in his fist and pulled back her head, bending to take her mouth. Her lips were soft and tasted of tangerine. Her tongue tangled with his, danced, teased, was provocative. He loved that about her. She couldn't resist him any more than he could resist her. When he knew he should stop, or he wouldn't be able to, he lifted his head and rested his forehead against hers.
Give me a chance, Blythe. That's all I'm asking. Just give me a chance.
She moistened her lips and her long lashes veiled her eyes. Before she could deny him even that much, he turned away from her to pick up the tray with the coffee mugs. She caught up a plate of cookies and followed him out into the great room.
You were going to tell us about this job of yours, Gavriel encouraged.
Victor nodded and caught at Blythe and pulled her down next to him before she could escape.
Yes, I've been riding with the swords for the last 5 years, working my way up the ranks to enforcer for the New Orleans chapter president. That's Evan Shackler Gratzos's original chapter. It was also Jackson DeVoe's father's chapter. If there's one man on earth Evan hates more than anyone else, it's Jackson. He wants him dead. He might never have done anything about it, but Jackson had the bad grace to marry L. Drake and actually be happy.
He kept his eye on Ilya. The man was reputed to be very close friends with Jackson DeVoe, and L. Drake was his sister-in-law. Victor stretched one arm along the back of the love seat to curl it around Blythe. He liked her close to him. With his other hand, he raised the coffee mug to his lips.
And?
Maxime said.
Shackler inherited billions from his brother, but also a huge international shipping company. As international president of the Swords, he had already built his own empire on human trafficking. It's out doing drugs, and he caught on to that very early. With the ships, he can charge an outrageous amount of money to special clients with special needs. They like to kill their victims after or during the time they use them.
Maxime nodded.
I ran into them a few weeks back. Four of the children are with me now. I couldn't save their sister.
There was regret, even sorrow, in his voice.
Evan is extremely paranoid. He moves constantly and isn't easily tracked. By the time I get to one hideout, he's already gone. DeVoe marrying L. Drake changed all that. As a member of the Swords Club, I knew sooner or later I'd get a chance at him. Now I'm certain of it. He sent me here, without wearing colors, to set up a camp for more swords to come in. I'm supposed to find out everything there is to know about the security around Jackson and his wife. From the way it looks to me, he plans on killing DeVoe and taking the wife.
There was silence. Ilya pinned him with the same silvery eyes, their father's eyes.
What are your plans? I'm going to talk to DeVoe and L. Drake. I have to do it carefully. We just arrived, so I need to scout around and make certain Evan didn't send any other scouts ahead. It's like him to put something like that into play. My brothers are on that now.
What brothers?
Maxime asked. It was asked a little belligerently. There it was, the question he knew would come. The only person he would ever tell his story to was Blythe, no one else. In the telling, he would be revealing things to her about the others, things that were nobody else's business. Still, It was important to him to integrate his two families. On the other hand, he wasn't about to apologize to any of them, not after what he'd done for them.
There were only 18 survivors of my school. We formed a family of sorts.
A very lethal one.
We watched one another's backs, and they watched yours. When I was given the assignment to go after Evan, they were already disappearing because Sorbakov would put a hit out on one of them after some trumped-up offense. We knew it was a matter of time before he went after all of us. We devised a plan to escape, but once I really looked into Evan, I knew he had to be taken down.
Victor wasn't about to tell them the real reason he took the assignment, not with Ilya in the room.
One by one, they came out of hiding and joined the Swords in order to back me up. When this is over, I plan to live here. It's Blythe's home, and she needs to be here with her sisters and all of you. That means I make this my home, and they'll be with us.
He didn't dare look at Blythe's face. Fortunately, he'd chosen well, and she didn't contradict him in front of the others. He would have to thank her for that later. He massaged the tension gathering in the back of her neck.
"You plan on settling here with 17 other men?"
Stefan asked.
"Two of them are women."
Blythe moved, a subtle retreat, but he settled his fingers around the nape of her neck and kept her close.
"We plan to purchase some land and houses, set up businesses, go legit. Or as legit as we're able to go. We have our own club with our own colors."
"Bikers,"
Ilya said.
"Outlaws. Of sorts."
More like assassins, and every single one of his brothers knew that. They weren't all clean, with the exception, maybe, of his baby brother. Chapter 10. There was a longer silence while his brothers did exactly what Victor was doing, drinking coffee to give themselves a little time to figure out how to respond to that. Blythe bit her lip to keep from breaking the silence. 17 others? Good God, was he crazy? If they all were as scary as his friend Reaper, then she was moving out and leaving the house to all of them. His birth brothers could deal with them.
"So you plan to bring an outlaw biker club with you to settle here?"
"Blythe?"
Ilya looked straight at Victor's wife.
"How do you feel about that?"
Victor's fingers tightened involuntarily on the nape of her neck in warning. She moistened suddenly dry lips, feeling as if she were walking through a minefield with all the Perkenskys.
"I want Victor to have a home near his brothers, his family,"
she hastily added.
"If these other men and women mean that to him, that their family as well, then of course they should be close to him."
That was as diplomatic as she could possibly make it. She stumbled a little under every single one of the Perkenski brothers' eyes. They were weighing her words, watching to see if she was under duress of any kind. Of course she was under duress with Victor back and all of them watching her like hawks. She took another deep breath.
"And all of you should accept them into the family."
"All of us, Blythe,"
Gavriel said very gently. He rarely spoke above a low tone, but for some reason one could always hear and understand him. A faint tremor went down her back. She'd made a mistake, and she could feel it. Although it didn't show on their faces, they knew.
"Blythe, why don't you go get some beer for everyone rather than this coffee?"
Ilya suggested.
"Why don't you leave my wife the hell alone?"
Victor snapped, sitting up straight. Menace poured off of him in waves. Immediately, tension ratcheted up another notch. Blythe despised being the bone of contention, but really, 17 members of an outlaw biker club in her home? On the farm? What?
"That's still to be determined,"
Lev said.
"I think I'd like to go with Blythe and Ilya into the other room and talk this out."
"Maybe the two of you can step outside with me and I'll teach you some manners. Whether you like it or not, I'm still the head of this family, and Blythe is most definitely my wife."
"Fuck that,"
Ilya said crudely.
You don't show up after 30 years of silence and decide we're going to follow your lead. It doesn't work that way. And just for your information, Blythe is our family.
Victor was out of his chair so fast, Blythe didn't have time to catch a hold of his arm. Ilya and Lev both leapt up as well.
Seriously?
Gavril's voice was calm. He didn't move from his chair.
That's how you plan on handling this situation. Sit down, you two, unless you want him to beat you to a bloody pulp.
He couldn't,
Ilya stated.
He could, Gavril said. What's more, he would. He is the head of the family, whether you want to accept that or not. Blythe is his wife. You wouldn't allow anyone to interfere in your relationship with Jolie any more than I would allow it with Lexi.
Ilya shook his head.
He was gone 30 years. He didn't do a fucking thing for me, for any of us. He has his own family and has chosen to become an outlaw biker.
Blythe inhaled sharply. That wasn't true. All of them have made bargains with the devil in order to keep their youngest brother as clean as possible. He went to the least brutal school. He worked for Interpol in a legitimate business. She knew they'd all looked after him. Her sisters had told her how much keeping the baby of the family as clean as possible meant to them all. She expected Victor to object, but instead, he went absolutely still and then like ice. At least his exterior was like ice. Beneath that glacier was a red-hot volcanic roiling mass that could explode at any time.
That's enough, Ilya, Gavril said quietly. You have no idea what you're talking about.
Victor paced across the room to the wide stone fireplace, his back to his brothers. He stood staring at the pictures on the mantel, and Blythe found herself standing as well, suddenly terrified for him. There was nothing she could say or do. It was already too late. She knew the exact moment when he saw it. His hand reached out and his body jerked as though someone had punched him hard, right in the gut. She'd framed it in gold filigree. The calligraphy said, "Held with love, surrounded by two loving hearts." Their daughter, Victoria. She had lived 2 days, and a nurse had taken a picture of the tiny infant lying on Blythe's stomach. It was the only picture she had of their child, and she'd put the only picture she had of Victor on the other side, so their child had her mother and father with her in that moment. She'd had the same picture put on canvas for her wall in her sitting room, but for him to see this now. Victor's finger stroked a gentle caress over the infant, as if he could somehow touch her through the glass. Blythe had done the exact same thing so many times she worried she'd wear down the glass. Grief filled the room, so strong, so intense, she couldn't stop herself from going to him. For her, it was 5 years. For him, their child had just died. How much more could he take? She wrapped her arms around him and just held him, feeling the shudders go through his body as he tried to remain upright and unbowed in facing the reality of the death of their child. There was silence in the room. She knew the Prokhenskys were gifted. She just didn't know in what way. She had no way of knowing if they felt his grief. He wouldn't like that. He wouldn't want to appear vulnerable in any way. She desperately wanted to shield him. She just didn't know how. Blythe knew the others couldn't see the picture, not with Victor in front of it. She slipped around Victor until her front was pressed tightly to his side. The position enabled her to reach up to the mantel.
Gavril is with Lexi,
she said softly, reaching up to touch Lexi's picture. She's the youngest and a sweetheart. You'll love her immediately, Victor. No one can help it. Isn't that right, Gavril? She'd chosen him because he remembered his brother. He knew what Victor had gone through, at least part of it. He'd helped her defuse the volatile situation and at the same time give Victor the minutes he needed to recover. Gavril stood up as well and came to the fireplace. She thought his approach was interesting. He didn't come up behind them, but rather from an angle, keeping his pace slow and deliberate. His eyes were on the pictures. Not Lexi's, but the one his brother had touched so gently. He reached out as if he would touch Victor's shoulder.
Don't.
One word from Victor. A warning. A statement. Gavriel's hand moved to Lexi's picture.
I'm working on getting her to marry me. She said yes, but we haven't actually gotten to the priest. I'm afraid if I push it, she'll run. She's a beautiful person, inside and out, and she has tremendous patience with me. I can't wait for you to meet her.
There was the smallest of tremors in Victor's hand when he took the picture from Gavriel. That nearly imperceptible shake made Blythe's heart clench in reaction. She knew Gavriel had to see it because he didn't miss anything. She knew if he looked at her, she would shatter. She moved closer to Victor, if it was at all possible, her fingers curling tightly in the T that was stretched across his broad chest. At once, Victor's hand covered hers.
I'd love to meet her. As soon as this mess is over, Gavriel, I'll be more than happy to meet my future sister-in-law. I take it she's the one who works the farm?
Victor's voice was rock steady. He turned Blythe away from the fireplace, wrapping his arms around her as he did so. She remembered the feeling of being safe and protected from earlier, when they were together. Victor could do that, wrap her up in his strength. He would fight for her if there were need. He would console her and comfort her. He was the one needing those things, yet the moment she was distressed, he offered them to her.
I cook, Lev volunteered before anyone else could say anything. Maybe we should throw a big party. Barbecue, Maxime added. The women can make all those side dishes that are so good, and Lucia makes this dessert that's sheer heaven. I'm putting on weight with that girl's cooking. Ariana and I are adopting Lucia and her sisters and brother. Benito is a mini-me, unfortunately, and determined to keep his sisters from ever coming to harm again. Expect him to come down Blythe's chimney or something.
Blythe was certain they'd read the grief filling the room. They didn't understand it, but several of Victor's brothers glanced at the framed pictures she kept on the mantel. She knew they were unable to see what had upset their oldest brother, because Victor had deliberately turned the picture away from their line of sight, but they followed Gavriel's lead in spite of the tension between them all.
Sounds good, Victor said. I want to meet all the wives.
If you don't mind, Blythe said, I need a little air.
She could barely breathe, Victor's emotions choking her.
She wished she could be stoic like him, an expression of stone, cold eyes and steady hands.
Once past the initial moment, that first piercing of his heart, he had stood unbending. She hoped if she got Victor out of the room, Gavriel would be able to talk his brothers into being kinder. He saw the photograph.
We'll be right back, Victor said immediately.
He took her hand and, without another glance at his brothers, led her out onto her spacious wraparound covered porch. Right in front of her stood the man Victor had called Reaper. He rested one hip against a tree, eating an apple. Blythe narrowed her eyes at him.
Is that my apple?
Yes, Reaper kept eating. That meant, with all the Prokhensky brothers, including Gavriel, in her living room, Reaper had entered her kitchen undetected. That was a scary thought.
Is everyone still here?
Reaper paused in the act of taking another bite. He nodded.
Yep.
Are they all eating my apples?
Reaper nodded again.
Yep.
Blythe couldn't help it. She knew she shouldn't encourage Victor or his brothers, but Reaper, standing there without expression, looking scary with his tattoos and badass persona, eating an apple he'd filched from her kitchen, was too funny. She burst out laughing.
Have you eaten anything tonight?
Reaper glanced down at the mostly eaten apple.
This apple.
You're not going to fix them all food. Get out of here,
Victor snapped before she could offer.
I mean it, Reaper. Take everyone with you.
Not gonna happen, Tsar.
Do you think my own birth brothers are going to take out a gun and shoot me?
Sounded like it,
Reaper said.
Course I would have blown his fucking head off first,
he said in the same casual tone.
Maybe one or two of the others, but Savage, Storm, and Ice would have taken them.
Blythe shivered. For a moment, she'd forgotten she was dealing with men who had no compunction about killing. Reaper was so casual, as if he was talking about the weather. These men were trained assassins. She'd thought Gavriel was bad, that the others had done what they needed to do to survive. Yes, they were capable of killing if they had no other choice. But Victor and Reaper, and probably the others, would make it their choice. They didn't seem to have a middle ground.
You don't lay a finger on those boys, Victor said, his tone low and mean.
Wasn't planning on using my hands, Zar. A bullet would have worked.
Reaper sounded as calm as ever.
Get the fuck out.
Blythe threw her hands into the air. That's it. I'm done. I'm at my absolute limit. Victor, leave. Take your men with you. All of them. I'm going in and going to bed. She turned, and Victor's six brothers were fanned out behind them, all staring at Reaper with cool eyes. And you, all of you, go home. I'm perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. I'm sorry you got called out in the middle of the night, and I thank you for coming, but go home. Ilya and Lev, both of you should be ashamed of yourselves. Your brother comes home, and instead of welcoming him, you are nasty and mean. I'm ashamed of both of you. I don't care what resentments you harbor. The least you could have done was ask him how he was. Now go, all of you. She pulled away from Victor, stomped right through the wall of Perkinsky Brothers, slammed her screen and then the door, flipped off the porch light, and stormed upstairs. She was shaking by the time she got to the top of the stairs. Hopefully no one got killed on her front porch. If they did, she was burying them out in the forest, and then she was getting in her car and driving away. Sinking down onto the top stair, she covered her face with her hands and let herself cry. She thought she wouldn't have any more tears, but Victor had unleashed an entire flood. She didn't even bother to listen to hear if the men came to blows or not. Eventually, she made her way up to the master bedroom. Victor's scent was everywhere. His ragged denim jacket was on the end of her bed. She should have tossed it out of her room, but she couldn't. Instead, she ignored it completely, took a hot, scented bath in the hopes that her perfume would cover Victor's outdoorsy, spicy smell, the one she loved, and got ready for bed. In the end, she picked up his jacket, held it to her like a favorite blanket, pulled up her covers, turned off her light, and went to sleep from sheer exhaustion. Blythe came awake fast, aware she wasn't alone. She took in the air around her to try to determine who was in the room with her and if she was in danger or not.
Are you awake?
She recognized the voice. Reaper, Victor's friend. She immediately sat up, clutching Victor's jacket to her, thankful she hadn't slept in the nude as she normally did. She'd been a little afraid Victor might show up, and she didn't want to feel vulnerable. Anxiety gripped her. She pushed back the hair tumbling in her face and looked frantically around for Victor. Reaper had to be able to hear her heart pounding. She felt like her heart might just come right out of her chest. Is something wrong? Did something happen to him? She pushed back the covers quickly. Take me to him. I'll call Libby. She's home, and she can heal anything. There was no hiding the sudden terror in her voice. Victor had just come home. Had Evan found out already that he was undercover? Had they shot him? Killed him? Had his birth brothers lost their minds and attacked him? Reaper shook his head as she dropped both legs to the floor in preparation for finding her clothes. She didn't even have time to be embarrassed about being caught in her thin racerback night tee and little boy shorts, or that she had Victor's jacket held so tightly against her. Only then did she become aware they weren't alone. She turned her head toward the corner where her reading chair was. A woman was curled up there watching her closely, the same woman who had been sitting so casually, as if she belonged, on the back of Victor's motorcycle. Blythe took a deep breath when everything inside her felt frozen. Very slowly, she set the denim jacket on the bed beside her
as if she had been caught doing something wrong. What's going on? Before anything else, she had to know Victor was alive and well.
I'd never let anything happen to him,
Reaper assured her. Savage and the others are watching over him, but I wanted to talk to you. We both did.
I see, Blythe said, but she didn't at all.
Now she felt at a distinct disadvantage. The woman in the corner was younger than she was, and really beautiful. She wore makeup, while Blythe had carefully washed what little makeup she wore right off.
We're not here to threaten you in any way, Reaper said.
He had the deadest eyes of any man she'd ever seen. She just managed to keep from shivering looking at him. He was cold through and through, yet he was intensely loyal to Victor, and she could like him for that. She nodded her head and held on to calm. She had always remained calm in the face of her mother's shrieking temper tantrums. She could apply those childhood lessons here very well. Her fingers crept down and across the sheets to the edge of the jacket, a talisman. Reaper saw, but she didn't care what she was revealing to him.
Do you want something to eat? Drink? I'm sure I could manage to find you both something.
She kept her tone friendly, but not too friendly. She didn't want them to see through her facade.
I'm going to turn on the light, Reaper warned. I want to show you something.
She wrapped her arms around her middle. Victor had been the most immodest man she'd ever met. Nudity meant nothing at all to him. He'd been the one to get her to sleep without clothes. He liked to make love to her in their backyard, once on their front porch in the dead of night. He didn't seem to see anything wrong with touching her no matter where they were, and he liked her to do the same. Once, she'd been very brave, and she'd dropped to her knees after skinny-dipping with him in the river, and she'd sucked him off, the forbidden of being outdoors in the open adding to the excitement. Reaper slowly removed his jacket and then pulled up his tee with one hand. She just kept from gasping when she saw his body. Victor had scars, but nothing like what Reaper's body held. They were everywhere. Burn marks, old knife wounds, bullet scars, at least one kind of whip, other scars she couldn't identify, but thought they had been made by worse things she had no idea of. He turned his back to her.
Elena, come here. I want you to show her while I explain.
Elena gracefully slid from the chair like a slinky cat, moving with the same fluid ripple of muscle the men surrounding her did.
I'm Elena,
she introduced herself as she stepped to the other side of Blythe.
I've wanted to meet you for a very long time.
Blythe forced a small smile. Elena didn't sound like the other woman. Wouldn't she be there to cut her into little pieces if Victor was her man? She was more confused than ever. Part of her knew she'd held on to the belief that Elena was Victor's woman in order to keep him at arm's length. Once again, because she was a little afraid of what they planned, she let her hand slide over Victor's jacket.
I want you to take a good look at this tattoo.
Reaper's voice was dead as his eyes, low, so low it was almost a thread of sound, yet at the same time it was commanding and cold. There would be no disobeying that voice, not without knowing the consequences would be death. Blythe willingly obliged him. She stared at the rather gruesome tattoo that took up a good deal of his back.
It's important for you to know just who and what Victor really is, why we ride with him, why we protect him. You see the tree trunk? That's Victor. He was 13 when I came to the school. I was 4 and my brother was 3 when we were taken from our parents. There were 287 students that over the years were brought to that school. 18 of us survived. You see the limbs of the trees? There are 17 of them.
Elena touched each of the branches on Reaper's back.
Victor saved all 17 of us. He didn't just save our lives. He saved our humanity, or at least he managed to save most of our humanity.
Blythe's gaze jumped to Reaper's face as he looked back at her over his shoulder.
She knew he was telling her he had no humanity left in him, and she believed him. Whatever this man had been through had been worse than hell.
The crows in the trees represent the children we couldn't save. They carry the skulls of the ones we killed to avenge them.
Elena touched the crows almost reverently, and then stepped away as Reaper reached for his shirt and yanked it back over his head.
The skulls on the ground? In the roots?
Each of us has a different number. We're assassins. That's what they trained us for, and that's what they had us do for the government. Others we killed to survive. Each of us carries the weight of that on our skin.
She raised her eyes to his. There had been piles of skulls in that root system, so many she wasn't certain she could count them all. This was the scariest man she'd ever run across.
You're telling me this because...
I can't tell you why Victor fought to save us, only that he did. He's a good man. They don't come any better. He still fights for us. In all the time I've ever known him, the only things he's asked for were to help him keep his brothers safe and to watch over you. You're everything to him.
Blythe made an involuntary movement away from him as he turned back around, rejecting what he was telling her. She shook her head, carefully threading her fingers together, Victor's jacket between them to give her courage. She didn't feel any threat from either of the two. In fact, she couldn't feel Reaper's emotions at all, only Elena's.
Ink, one of our brothers, began that sketch when we were teenagers. Eventually he perfected it, and we took it as our symbol. We call ourselves Torpedo Ink.
Blythe knew that in Russia, sometimes a hitman or assassin was referred to as a torpedo. The ink could be a play on the word incorporated. Whatever the reason for their name, no one should take it at face value, least of all her. These were the men and women Victor expected her to take in along with some unknown teenaged girl. She crushed his jacket in her fist.
Why a motorcycle club? Won't that get you unwanted attention? All of you have had to be so careful not to draw attention to yourselves.
We ride because it makes us feel free when we've never been free. Victor gave us that as well. It was difficult to remove our colors and ride with the swords, but we'd follow him anywhere.
Elena nodded solemnly.
I'd be dead if it wasn't for Victor. He figured out a way to keep us alive in that horrible place. We made it through because of him. I know it looked bad, me being on the bike, but the swords would never have believed him staying away from other women if he didn't have an old lady. It protected both of us to pretend. I swear to you, he's a big brother to me, nothing else.
Blythe didn't know what to say, so she remained silent. She had mixed feelings about them coming to her in the middle of the night on Victor's behalf, mostly because it made her like them. And she didn't want to feel anything at all for them, especially Reaper. She worried that he was incapable of feeling true emotion, but clearly he felt something for Victor. She cleared her throat.
So you had actually formed a club before Victor wrote with the swords?
Reaper nodded.
We found riding motorcycles and the structure of a family, knowing we had one another's backs at all times, no matter what assignment we took. Kept us sane. Well,
he glanced at Elena,
some of us sane.
You're sane, Reaper,
she reprimanded softly.
And we were a brotherhood, a family, long before the club.
Reaper shrugged and turned all his attention back to Blythe.
After Victor met you, he was different. I thought we'd lose him before that. All of us watched him so carefully.
That brought her head up.
What do you mean, lose him?
The deaths of all those other children weighed on him so heavily. He blamed himself for not being able to prevent them, he explained. Hell, he was 10 when he got there. Some of the kids were older than he was. Still, that didn't matter. His sense of responsibility was already so developed that he took on that burden. Sometimes, he just couldn't live with it.
For a moment, she couldn't breathe. Just the thought of Victor killing himself was too much after reliving the death of her daughter with him. Involuntarily, she brought the jacket to her face and held it there for a moment, uncaring what either of them thought. She remembered more than one night waking up to Victor sitting on the edge of the bed, head in hands, sweat beating his body, his breath coming in ragged pants as if he'd run a marathon. He wouldn't talk to her, so she talked to him in the only way she could. She made love to him, fiercely protective, wholly surrendering to him, giving him everything he demanded and needed. He held her so tightly afterward, she thought every bone in her body might break, but she never protested. Eventually, he fell asleep, and she would watch over him as if she could prevent whatever terrible nightmares might creep into their world. The idea that Victor might ever contemplate ending his life was terrifying to her. "Once he met you, his entire world seemed to change. He was happy. He actually laughed. He was just different. When he had to leave you, he was devastated. He planned to get back to you immediately, but Absinthe was shot all to hell and in the middle of a very bad situation. Victor was the closest, so he went to try to save him. They had to hole up for a few weeks, and then Sorbakov gave him an assignment." She realized that Reaper was uncomfortable, not only telling her so much, but actually talking. He was stepping out of his usual role to advocate for a man he clearly loved. That made her want to listen, when before she'd been reluctant to know anything more about Victor or his life without her.
"You didn't ever turn down Sorbakov, or you found several hitmen at your door. More, Sorbakov threatened his brothers. He sent you messages, Blythe. I saw them. He tried to get his birth brothers to check up on you. Eventually, we did, but you were here at that time and seemed fine and happy. No one knew why you wouldn't reply back. He could only assume it was because you were angry with him, and justifiably so. He thought if he could get here to talk to you, he could explain everything."
She knew what he was telling her was the truth. She ached inside for both of them, Victor and her. "There are things that happened while he was gone," she said softly, trying to explain without telling them. She couldn't go there again, not at night, not when she was alone and Victor was so close. "Sometimes things happen that make it impossible to go back." She prayed he wouldn't ask because she had the feeling one didn't tell Reaper no when he asked a question. Maybe he already knew. He'd been on the roof when Victor and she had been talking. Elena sat on the bed beside her. "You don't have to go back, Blythe," she said gently. "Only forward. Victor taught us that. Whatever happened to you, and I know it was bad because Victor was a mess tonight, you have to keep going forward, hopefully with him. Just give him a chance to talk to you, to really talk to you, really talk to you. And you hear what he's saying to you. I know no one will ever love you more or better." She found herself nodding when everything in her screamed for self-preservation. She moistened suddenly dry lips before she could actually find her voice. "Victor isn't the kind of man to give up when he wants something." "That's true," Elena said. "But he likes that you have a good life here, and he doesn't want to mess that up for you. He comes with baggage. With us." She looked at Reaper, and then down at her hands. It was the first time that Elena seemed uncertain, and at first, Blythe thought it might be affected, as if she was playing a role to get sympathy. Elena had been trained to appear as anything she wanted to be, just as Victor and Reaper had. The one thing a person couldn't do was fake emotion around her. Blythe felt that uncertainty.
"What are your plans?"
she asked gently, because it was in her nature to soothe others in distress.
"We're looking at land in the Casper area. There's a lot of land and houses for sale there, and we'd need to be able to purchase land that is zoned for businesses as well. We've never actually had a home base. We thought Ink could have a tattoo shop. I'd like a restaurant. I love to cook and for lots of people. Something small but nice. Keys, Master, Player, and Maestro would like to have a small club so they could play regularly. And there's a roadhouse for sale. That would be awesome to have.
enthusiasm poured into her voice. Transporter and mechanic would love their own garage where they could build custom cars and bikes and just tinker all day.
Blythe looked up at Reaper's blank features. He could have been carved from stone, the lines in his face cut deep. There weren't going to be any plans for a shop for him. She couldn't imagine how he could possibly integrate back into society. For that matter, she doubted if any of them could.
The Prokensky brothers hadn't. Not really. Stefan did help Judith with the art gallery, and Lev went out with Ricky on the boat to dive for sea urchins. Maxime headed up security for Ariana, who worked for the Defense Department. Gavriel stayed close to Lexi on the farm, far away from people. Casimir had just returned with Lissa, and Blythe had no idea what his plans were.
"Don't say no to him because of us," Reaper said.
It was the first time his voice was a little gruff. It had dropped an octave, causing Blythe to search his face. There was no expression, but something worked behind those cold, cold eyes.
"I wouldn't do that," Blythe said. "Really, my problems with Victor have nothing to do with any of you."
Just being in the same room with Reaper tore her heart out. She could see why Victor kept close watch over him. It was heartbreaking to see and feel him. And Elena, the woman was young and clearly lethal. Blythe had that built-in radar, her compass, when it came to reading people. As a child, she had known there was something off about her mother. Elena looked like the sweetest innocent, but she felt dangerous.
"But still, you want to give him a chance, don't you?"
Those soft words brushed at the walls of her mind, and Blythe instantly recoiled. Simultaneously, Reaper let out a low growl.
"Elena, we agreed. No manipulation. Not on Blythe. She's one of us. She's Victor's chosen woman. His wife. And that's sacred."
At the reprimand, Elena's eyes swam with tears, and her barriers came tumbling down. The force of her fears hit Blythe so hard, she reeled under the impact. Elena was terrified. What would Reaper do to her?
"I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry, Blythe. I did promise Reaper before we came here, but I'm so afraid of losing Victor."
The relief was tremendous. Elena wasn't afraid of Reaper's retaliation. She was afraid for Victor. There was no faking that overwhelming fear. With relief came trepidation. If his family was so afraid of losing him, it had to be real. Now that she'd seen him, now that she knew something or someone else had prevented him from getting to her, she knew she couldn't live without knowing he wasn't somewhere in the world.
"I'll talk to him, but I can't promise anything. When he shot Ray, dropped the gun, and then grabbed me, whispering he'd be back in a couple of days to explain, I barely registered it. Later, when the police confirmed who Ray really was, it was all I could think about. I thought maybe he was a boy Ray had harmed, or his brother had been, and it was a revenge thing. I didn't know much about the Prokenskys until Lev arrived. My cousin Jolie is married to Ilya Prokensky, the youngest brother, but I don't exactly move in their circles, so I've never actually talked to Ilya about his brothers."
"Ilya seemed protective of you."
Her gaze once again jumped to Reaper's face. There was no expression, and his eyes were back to being dead. But he'd been there in the house somewhere, watching over Victor. Even the Prokenskys hadn't known, or they wouldn't have allowed it. Not even Gavriel, and he was much like Victor. Even while it had made her a little uncomfortable that Reaper could be in her house unseen, she was grateful that he was the one dedicated to protecting Victor.
"All the Prokenskys have an extremely protective instinct. Jolie is my cousin. That makes me family. They also have a huge sense of family."
"We do too,"
Elena said.
"We'd better go," Reaper said. "Victor would beat the shit out of me if he knew I was here, and I have to tell him. I still have that to do."
"Elena, just one thing," Blythe said. "So we understand each other.
Manipulation doesn't work on me. I feel the energy and emotion when you're using it, and it's easy enough to avoid.
Elena's smile was slow in coming, but when it did, it was full and real.
Good to know.
She stood up.
Thanks for listening to us. Anytime, but, Reaper, please don't make a habit of midnight visits. I often sleep without clothes.
Wouldn't bother me.
She sighed. She had the feeling he was telling her the strict truth. Chapter 11. Victor studied the surrounding land from where he sat on his bike. The ocean was straight in front of him, and today it was acting up as if a storm was brewing. He liked the Northern California coast. The ocean could be wild and quite violent at times, and at others as clear as glass. The various moods suited him. He lifted his face to catch the wind coming in off the sea. There was quite a bit of land for sale in the small village of Casper. At one time, the town must have thrived, but over the years, the lack of jobs had reduced it to more of a ghost town. He liked the idea of purchasing most of what had been the town, along with several houses. They could do a lot with the place. He'd like to make certain each of them had the shop or restaurant that they had long ago dreamt of. It wasn't too late for any of them, he hoped. The two he worried the most about, Reaper and Savage, he had no idea what they'd do. The roar of four Harleys told him the two brothers were on their way back to him with two others. Judging from the sound, Ice and Storm, Elena's birth brothers, were with them. They'd been scouting around for some time. The others were still in the camps they'd set up in a campground with the interesting name of Jug Handle. It wasn't a place for the swords, too many civilians, but it gave Torpedo Inc. access to both Sea Haven and Fort Bragg. It had been too many days, three, since he'd talked to Blythe. She had disappeared. He knew she hadn't gone back home because he'd spent the last three nights on her bed. She wasn't at any of her sister's homes, either. He'd checked, repeatedly. He had a job to do, and if he didn't get his mind right soon, it would get him killed. Better that than to try to live without her. He figured his next move was to just ask one of her sisters. They'd probably slam the door in his face, but he'd keep after them until he found her. He'd learned as a child, if he wanted to survive, if he needed anything from food for the other kids to medical supplies or information, to just keep pushing until he got his way. Reaper and Savage pulled up on one side of him, Ice and Storm on the other. He glanced at them, and then back at the ocean. Trouble. He knew it was coming. It had left him alone a little bit too long.
Tell me.
All four men shut down the motors and stayed, like him, straddling their bikes.
You were right. That bastard is up to his old games. He sent another team in, but they're watching us, not establishing a campground. They're in Sea Haven right now, acting like fools, getting rowdy with the locals. Someone is going to call the sheriff, and it's going to turn into a bloodbath. From what I saw of those two, Harrington and DeVoe, there's no backup in them,
Reaper said.
Are they watching the farm?
He kept his eyes on the crashing waves, stillness settling in him. He was used to trouble, to action. He needed it, and the swords were delivering it up to him like sacrificial lambs. Ice answered.
I followed them. They hung out at the local bar right there on the main street.
I could have done them all when they came out, loud-mouthed, drawing attention to themselves. They're here for a covert operation, but they're making asses out of themselves.
Victor frowned.
Maybe they're supposed to find us and camp with us, the first wave before the others come.
He hoped not. He was restless and edgy. That was always a bad sign with him. He needed the action, the same as Reaper, Savage, and the others. Savage shook his head.
Caught two of them spying on our camp. Spent a bit of time with them. That's what made us go to town looking for the others.
Victor scowled at him.
You spent time with them?
Needed information, Czar,
Savage said.
caught the bastards red-handing ogling Elena while she was showering. I'll just bet she stripped nice and slow for them, kept their attention on her while the two of you crept up on them and caught them red-handed.
No need for sarcasm. Elena can't help but be beautiful, I said. But no one's going to watch my sister shower when she thinks she's alone.
Fat chance Elena thought she was alone. If Savage caught them, it was because Elena deliberately put on a show to keep their attention. It was the easiest trick in the book, and one his family had used even as children. Elena and Lana had both used that technique more than once when they were trapping the worst of the pedophiles in the school.
I don't want any blowback. Seriously, we're going to establish ourselves here. We can't have bodies turning up, Victor cautioned, especially if they have any marks on them due to a talk.
Savage shrugged.
Nice thing about this part of the country is lots of places for bodies. No one is going to be finding them. Make certain, and make certain nothing can be traced back to you.
Savage didn't bother to answer a second time, nor did Victor expect him to.
Are they wearing their colors?
No, but they're talking loudly, Storm said. They want everyone to be afraid of them. It's rather obvious. DeVoe or Harrington sees them, for certain there's going to be a confrontation.
How many?
6 in town. The other two don't matter much now, Ice answered.
Victor sighed.
I want all of you to listen to me. You don't have to stay here and make this our home base. You don't. The only tie you have to this place is me. I have Blythe, and I need her.
He didn't talk feelings with his brothers. It just wasn't done. But someone had to lead the way into another life. None of them would survive if they kept going as they were.
I'm not going to lie to you about that. It's make it or not for me here. We keep doing what we are, sooner or later we'll cross a line we can't come back from. I'm not willing to do that.
What the fuck's are? Reaper snapped. No one's looking to leave.
Then we can't make it a practice to kill in our own backyard.
Storm made a sound like he was choking. Victor turned his head to glare at him, but a part of him couldn't help being a little pleased that Storm found anything he said funny. None of them laughed much. They didn't have much to laugh about. They certainly never showed a humorous side to anyone other than their brothers and sisters.
What's so funny?
We can't make it a practice to kill in our own backyard. We learned in our own backyard. It's what we did and what we do,
Ice answered for his brother.
You think we're suddenly going to be going to church on Sundays?
Okay, maybe it was a little funny. Victor kept his face expressionless.
If I say we go to church, we go to church,
he declared. Storm and Ice looked at each other, and then at Reaper and Savage. Reaper let out a sigh.
It's upon you, morons. We go to church every time we have an official meeting.
Victor let a smile slip through.
Idiots. Very funny. I thought I was totally screwed for a minute there, Storm said. I was sweating.
Ice shook his head.
You took a few years off my life with that one. You're getting all weird on us, Czar. Maybe you really would want us to go to Sunday school.
You could use it,
Victor informed him.
Like we don't get enough sermons from you already, Storm muttered.
Victor had to reach, but he managed to cuff him on the back of the head.
How many following me?
2,
Reaper answered, sounding almost bored.
Which chapter?
They aren't wearing their colors, but my guess is they're out of North Carolina. They have the accents,
I said. Victor started his Harley. The others followed suit. He had to get down to business now, and he hadn't settled things with Blythe. He'd hoped for more time, at least another week, to look around, find the perfect place Evan would want for his ambush, and yet at the same time make certain civilians could be protected. He needed to talk to his birth brothers again, to see if they knew a place he could bring the swords in that wouldn't alert a paranoid Evan to a possible double-cross. Mostly, he needed to talk to Blythe. He couldn't keep his mind on his job if he didn't straighten things out between them. More, it nagged at him that none of his messages had gotten through. No one but his birth brothers knew about the message center they had set up for emergencies and to be able to communicate with one another. They rarely used it, and only in code, just in case someone accidentally stumbled across it. But Victor knew that was next to impossible. Had one of his brothers betrayed him? If so, which one? Not Gavriel. They'd been the closest, and Gavriel's school hadn't been any picnic. He'd been brought to Victor's school once in order to scare the brothers into compliance. He knew how bad it could get. Stefan or Maxime? Casimir? He couldn't see that. He lifted his face to the wind. He loved riding free. He'd been a prisoner so long, locked up down in the basement, sometimes in chains, sometimes not, but living like an animal. Always hungry, always afraid. There was nothing like the open road. The roar of his bike and the feel of it, solid, part of him, as they moved together like one, man and machine. As he rode, he continued to turn the problem over and over in his mind. Ilya was a hothead. He couldn't really blame the kid, although part of him did, the hurt part of him. Sorbakov brought him pictures of the baby every so many years, to threaten him with bringing the boy to his school. Kids died at an alarming rate there. The last thing he wanted was for his baby brother to be in that terrible place among the criminals and the rats, the things that would be done to him. Even if the kid hated him, he couldn't imagine betrayal. But would Ilya see it that way? He clearly cared for Blythe. Would he wipe out every message from Victor to Blythe with a misguided belief that he was protecting her? That didn't make sense either. He didn't know Victor. Didn't know what kind of man he was. He signaled and turned off Highway 1 to take the exit leading to Sea Haven. It was only a few miles from Casper, where he hoped to settle. Less than 5 minutes. 10 to the farm, if he pushed it a little. It was a good place to try to build a life for his brothers and sisters. There was something healing in the sea air. He spotted the motorcycles as he turned onto the street leading to the main drag. They were out in front of the local grocery store. Out of habit, they'd left one of their newest members with the bikes. He had to be patched, or he wouldn't have been sent, so there was no discounting him in a fight. He looked shocked when Victor rode right up and parked his bike in the space to the left of the row of bikes. The kid swung his head toward the store as if trying to figure out how to warn his fellow swords. He pulled his cell phone out of his pocket, and as Victor went past him, Victor stripped it out of his hands. Reaper stomped on it with his motorcycle boot. Savage, Ice, and Storm followed suit. Victor yanked open the door to the grocery store, the familiar adrenaline hit rushing through his veins like a drug. He flexed his fingers inside the leather gloves, needing to hit someone. Hard.
"You have to pay for that,"
the voice shook a little, but was determined. An older man stood beside an older woman at the counter. The sword member was busy pocketing several items. Three others grabbed six packs of beer, while a fifth shoved a boy who had to be in his late teens or early 20s every time the boy reached to pick up bags of potato chips and rolling cans.
"Let Donnie go," a female voice added. "Donnie, get out of here now!"
"Shut the fuck up or I'll shut you up,"
snapped the first one, the obvious leader. His gaze went to the boy on the floor that his fellow biker had shoved over with his foot. He grinned as the boy sprawled out on the floor. It was that grin as the boy landed on his belly, arms and legs splayed wide. The look of fear on the kid's face. The dark rage in the pit of Victor's belly began to churn. The burn inside grew hotter, searing right through him. The kid looked helpless. How many kids had he seen looking just like that? Maybe they weren't as old as this one, but he wasn't quite right and looked and acted younger. Still, the boy had courage. It wouldn't do him any good against the kind of men in the store. As he tried to roll over, the biker kicked him again, this time in the ribs. His fellow bikers howled with laughter, as if they were watching a movie rather than seeing pain spreading across the face of a young man. That rage inside of Victor erupted into a red river of ferocity, calling for violence. The vicious well roiled and seethed while images of dead children shimmered in front of his eyes.
I'm calling the sheriff,
the woman said.
You do that. He won't walk out of here alive,
the leader snapped, leaning across the counter and grabbing her by the neck. He shook her.
Inez,
the older man whispered. She looked very fragile, her thin body like a rag doll's. He looked at the others, and they all laughed.
He can't do nothing, you old bitch. Maybe he can't,
Victor said quietly.
But I can.
The rush was on him, the need.
Let her go now.
His voice might be low, but it carried unmistakable authority. He'd been czar since he was 10 years old, commanding children older than him, planning battles. He'd learned to fight and then to kill with his bare hands. So long ago. So many dead men since then. It was in his voice. Demons were in his eyes. Need was a living, breathing entity. Beside him, Reaper, Savage, Ice, and Storm spread out, trapping the 5 swords between them and the exit. He jerked his head toward the kid on the floor, and Ice sauntered over to him, reached down, and helped the boy to his feet. Very slowly, the leader let go of Inez and turned fully to face him. Donnie scrambled over to the woman, slipping behind the counter to face them. He looked as if he'd been trying not to cry. Clearly, the swords had been pushing him around for some time.
How much do they owe you, ma'am?
Victor inquired softly.
Inez,
she mumbled, as she rang up the rest of the beer and the cigarettes the leader had indicated.
Everyone calls me Inez.
She was nervous. Her hand was shaking, but both stood their ground even in the face of the 5 men looking for trouble. He could see bruises already coming up on the woman's thin skin. Her wrist looked as if it was swelling. There were lumps on the boy's face. The evidence of a bully working over a kid and a woman was accelerant on the fire already building inside of him.
This ain't your business,
the leader snarled.
They knock over the chips and cans I see in the aisles,
Victor continued, ignoring the sword leader, his gaze on the woman. He couldn't attack first. He had to make the leader do it, and that had to be very, very clear in the recordings. He'd spotted the cameras the moment he'd entered, although he'd been careful not to look at them. He knew none of his brothers would either. They were too well trained. Inez nodded.
They broke the jars of mayonnaise and pickles in the back.
Victor stepped back and indicated the aisles.
Gentlemen, I suggest you go clean that up. You don't want me to take you out behind the barn and teach you a lesson in manners.
A dull flush of red came over the leader. He had his orders from his chapter president. They weren't to engage with Victor and the others. Just watch them. They weren't supposed to attract attention, but now they were getting dressed down by the very men they were supposed to be watching. They weren't wearing colors, and they'd never met, so the leader had to be thinking maybe Victor didn't know who he was. On the other hand, it went against everything in him to allow anyone to order him around or embarrass him and his brethren.
Fuck you,
he snapped. Victor smiled without much humor, goading him more.
Sorry, only my old lady gets to do that. You, on the other hand, need to pick up the items you and your boys knocked over.
Or what?
Or we're going to be taking this outside, and you're going to get your ass kicked. Inez is going to call the sheriff, and he's going to charge you with theft and vandalism. They'll probably lock you up for a while.
Now the leader had a real dilemma. He probably had outstanding warrants and couldn't afford to go to jail for anything petty. He stood for a moment and then stepped into Victor and swung. A surge of pure, savage joy ripped through Victor as he caught him, rolled him around, and muscled him right out of the store. Savage, Reaper, Ice, and Storm did the same with the others. Victor flung the leader into the street, almost into the path of a car. The car screamed to a halt as the man rose with a roar, lowered one shoulder, and rushed Victor, swinging at him. He stepped to the side, delivering a hard, solid blow to the man's face. He heard the satisfying crunch of cheekbone and added 2 more quick, hard blows, a roundhouse to his temple that rocked him, and an uppercut to his gut. They fought like two primitive warriors, although it became clear that Victor was doing more playing than fighting. Each blow he did deliver was hard enough to rock the man. He even slapped him a few times open-handed, delivering the insults to rile him more. In the distance, the sound of sirens grew louder. The leader heard them after a minute or two and tried to push away, but Victor refused to allow it. Now he stepped in close and pounded his fists into the man, connecting solidly, feeling the satisfying break of bones and cartilage. Around him, his brothers did the same with the others. They needed this release, this outlet. Reaper and Savage often fought for money, and they always won. Victor and the others bet on them because no matter what, they were going to get their money's worth. The two were impossible to beat. They fought viciously. All of them did. They didn't know any other way. They fought because they needed to feel the familiar strike of fist against flesh, raw pain exploding through their bodies, the adrenaline that told them they were alive and not robots just designed to kill. He detested that this man and his brothers from the club hurt children. They kidnapped women and raped them repeatedly. They beat them, just as they did young boys and girls, in order to make them compliant. It had been nothing to them to harm the older woman and the kid. The dark rage inside him had a good hold so that he saw red, saw the images of the dead children on the floor, their bodies litter, garbage to the ones that had killed them. They killed and then went off to drink. He hit and hit, losing himself in the rhythm, trying to get the sight of those children out of his mind. "Victor, stop!" A soft breeze slipped through the red haze, the lightest of touches, almost a caress. His name on her lips. God, God, he loved her. He wanted her. Right then, high as a kite from fighting, he wanted her with just the sound of her voice whispering through his mind. Stop, honey, or you're going to kill him. He wanted to kill him. Wasn't that the point? There were only the targets. That was what he could see. That was what he could feel under his fist as it slammed deep. Victor, stop right now and stop the others. The sheriff is coming. The worry in her voice broke through, and he stepped back, breathing hard, trying to catch his breath, trying to force the rage back into his belly and out of his veins, where it rushed like a drug. The leader staggered and went to his knees, blood dripping from a cut over his eyes and his nose. There was a mouse growing under each eye, and his jaw was swelling at an alarming rate. His breath came in ragged, labored pants as he struggled for air. Victor knew his ribs were caved in, and he'd hit hard enough to drive them into his lung. Stop! He made it in order, knowing the others were as bad or worse than him when they fought. It was all or nothing. There was no in-between, especially when they had an opportunity to go after any of the swords. They regarded them as the lowest of the low. To them, that was pedophiles, men and women who brutalized innocent children. Now! Just as Blythe's voice could stop him, his command was always obeyed, other than occasionally Reaper, and that was only when Victor's personal safety was at risk. He looked up, searching the crowd for her. She'd saved him from beating someone to death right in front of a very large crowd. His radar found her immediately, and his heart clenched hard in his chest. She looked beautiful, gorgeous, his woman. He had never looked at another woman the way he did her. He made love to her because his body recognized hers and responded naturally to her. That was a gift, a priceless gift.
You can't look at me or take up for me if the cops arrest me. Walk away, Blythe. This is dangerous.
He hoped she understood that he was working, and they were all in jeopardy. He'd kill every single one of these men in front of all of Seahaven if she was in danger, and he'd go to